Reichstag fire. They blamed the communists.
You're no Neville Chamberlain.
Yes. So, Abbie Hoffman.
Yeah,
you've had 8 kids. The second 4 were with another woman, or are you a stepfather?
No, my first one, there was like 5 births, and there were 2 girls, and 1 in 2 different, containers, bags, or whatever, with centers. They're twins.
Yeah. What about the next 4?
The next 2.
Oh.
6 and 2.
I see.
Do you, are you,
1 set of twins.
Are you in communication? How many of your children are you in communication with?
All of them.
Today? Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
What happened to the old guy, Charles, whose son was in the LaRouche organization going way back? He used to be on the bench here. He was very bitter about what happened to his son. Remember that guy?
Al?
Yeah, and he was an older man in the mid-90s, and his son was in the LaRouche group very early and never came out, and he thought it was a government cult. He's
well,
part
guy,
of the bench guy.
Well, see, there's a kind of people, like, I didn't really filter out the Iraqi people and the possibilities of recruiting people. And I went after people just because they were, like, activists.
Yeah.
Some of these activists are listening to right wing. There's a guy who's got African American blood in him. Like, you know, he's like not dark skin, but he's like big on the left wing, the right wing radio, and now he's on Fox cable as a guest. And I went after
Larry somebody?
Yeah.
My uncle listens to him.
Yeah.
And he
Larry Elder.
Larry Elder.
Is he from this neighborhood? Is that what you're saying?
The guy who used to, I didn't know this particular African guy was so hung up on him, because I used to say, you know, I'll give you the LaRouche newspaper, and it was a steel curtain between him and anything that I, if I was going to be handing out, no matter what it was, he would say no. He didn't know anything about LaRouche.
This is Larry Elder?
But Larry Elder is a person who will tell you that everyone else is missing the point. He's the only one that one should listen to, especially if one's skin is darker than his whitey.
And you used to hand out LaRouche literature to Larry Elder?
To Larry Elder's listeners. And then one day, one guy insulted me, and I didn't push it because I saw the evil in him emerge. And I said, well, "What am I doing? Wasting my time with this scum?" Phew. And then when he mispronounced the word paradigm when he was talking to somebody at the next table. I said, you know what, I'm not going to correct him. I'm not going to let him continue with his digim, you know, paradigm.
Paradigm. Another victory for Charles.
Ooh, wow. Yeah, I don't need a megaphone for that one.
Paradigm shift.
Yeah, he pretended, because there was a guy at Henry's Market that had the owner's son who was, you know, he went to computer school and all that. And I says, what kind of manual are you reading? He said, oh, something from the University of Chicago. I says, do you know anything about the history of their connection to the Nazi Party in the 1930s? And he said, no. Yeah. And I gave him a LaRouche paper. He just folds it, puts it underneath the counter. That's it. It never gets touched again. You know, on top of that, there'll be something else and so forth. So this guy's a white. This guy happens to be Indian and good-looking and tall, with
single?
Thick black hair, you know. But he's a know-it-all, and he couldn't get a job in the computing industry or any kind at all. So his mother
set up a little leather, you know, leather jackets and leather boots and stuff like that down the boardwalk for Sonny to have his own business. Because the woman, the mother gave a store to her daughter. And, anyway, the son, like, was nasty, you know, he had this attitude.
He put the LaRouche thing underneath the counter.
Yeah, under the counter, like, you know, I'll get to it later, but, you know, Dave, my friend Dave, who used to drive me to the meetings, he gave away the cultural magazine, which is called Fidelio, which is, you know, Beethoven's only opera. And it was inspired by the writings of Friedrich Schiller, because Schiller and Beethoven and Goethe used to have lunch every day and then drag out their, you know, bounce their ideas off each other, you know, three geniuses. And so Schiller, Schiller wrote this thing. I think it was originally called Leonora, because it was about the love of a woman for her husband, who was imprisoned, and it was going to be beheaded or hanged. And he happened to be the count who came over here from France and saved the American Revolution against the British by the name of Count de Lafayette, Marquis de Lafayette.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife, Leonora, found out that he was, when he went back to Europe to spread the word of the new republic in the North American planet, you know, I mean, continent, the, the prince of something of Vienna, the emperor, the guy who was the top person in Vienna at the time, put him in a prison, in a dungeon to have him executed. And his, Lafayette's wife dressed up as a lackey in filthy clothes and then smuggled more filthy clothes into the prison, and she was emptying out buckets of human waste. That was her job. It was the lowest rung in the, you know, minion would be probably a much better position, but a lackey is like the guy shovels the crap in a barn on a farm, you know. Guys, I'll do anything you want. Okay, you know, start here. Start in the, where the cows are, you know, horses, whatever. But anyway, make a long story short, she took money and she bribed the guards in the prison in Vienna to let her walk out with this other person dressed in rags. He couldn't walk out dressed as a count. Because, you know, so he was a prisoner. So she helped him escape, risking her own life. And it inspired Friedrich Schiller of the Schiller Institute now, you know, he was in the 1700s, to write
the story, and that's what Fidelio is based
on. And then Beethoven.
And that's the magazine that your friend Dave was handing out.
Exactly, right. This magazine, I cherish this magazine, and I've given it to people, and they just go, you know, they're drooling from stupidity.
You know what? Maybe a video would have been better.
Yeah, I sent videos to my daughter up in Lexington, Mass, and she you know, she says, yeah, Rusha's got a lot of good things to say, but she said he'll never become president. And then she goes, ha ha ha, you know, because it was when he was running for president since the 60s, because his policies are heard, and hopefully somebody...
Since 76, Charles.
Since 76, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that magazine went from one guy to the guy who gave me the ride for 14 years. He gave that magazine to somebody, and the guy called him up many, many years later and said, you know, I've been reading that Fidelio magazine. He says, I want to go to a meeting. And he was like an egotistical, big-mouth, narcissistic punk. to begin with, who is always boasting about what he knows. And then if he knew something, he would go into detail about it, knowing that the people listening, captive audience, don't know what he knows about this particular story, and usually about music, construction, you know, box, what's that, forget the, is it fugue, his fugue?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like intellectuals in the LaRouche organization, and very impressive, some of them. Some of them come all the way over from Denmark just to work with LaRouche and Needham and so forth. But they have, you know, they have their quirks.
Their website's really good now, Robin, and you can see their lectures on geometry and math. It's very interesting.
Have you looked at any of that stuff, Charles, the geometry and math at LaRouche?
I make sure that my my youngest son, who is a mathematical gift, he's gifted, gets copies of whatever I think is, you know, from Kepler to Riemann to in Leibniz, right down to Einstein.
Yeah.
Can't badmouth Einstein.
Hey, can I ask you, what do you think the difference between Leibniz and Newton is?
Newton was a babbling maniac who slept in the back rows of the lecture halls at Oxford.
Now tell me how you really feel.
In the same clothes, and was found addressing an empty concert hall at different hours of the night, and he would like lay down on the floor, I'm just using this as a metaphor, and kick his feet until he got his little gift at the mall, you know. The mother, the only way the mother could stop the kid from fussing and kicking his legs and creating a scene at the mall is to buy the kid that, you know,
let me
that
ask
little
you,
plastic.
Let me
now, Leibniz, now ask him to explain Leibniz. Describe Leibniz.
Okay. Describe Leibniz.
I can't. Because I'm not mathematically and scientifically equipped like a lot of the people that, like Bruce Director is the, he's the genius in the LaRouche organization.
He does the videos,
He can, he can like, he can, you know, point to something on Einstein's blackboard and explain it back to a point. He's a genius. And all I can do is, I never use the word awesome. Mm-hmm. Never in my life have I ever used that word. But I'm in awe of people like Bob and Bruce Director and Lyndon LaRouche. And
did you say Bob?
You, yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
And
Erasmus. Oh,
and Erasmus. You know, and
Leibniz.
The ancient Greek fellow?
No, Erasmus
is from Rotterdam.
1500s.
In what
He had that.
Erasmus.
He had the. He had that. He put together the first parochial school of like classical education, where they got a complete education, like Jeff, like Thomas Jefferson got. I mean, I read in LaRouche, one of his Fidelio magazines, which is about that thick. You know, it's like 100-something pages and beautiful paper, but they start printing it. It's gone out. It's extinct now, defunct rather. But I read that. Who was it? I was talking about Erasmus.